Voices are calling round the earth. Music is rising in have to roll our eyes and whisper to each other after somebody makes us sing around together.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning and welcome to Essex Church, where this, our gathered community of Kensington Unitarians, has its spiritual home. Ours is a community created by all who walk through our doors. And as summer in the city begins in earnest, I think now, it's a particular pleasure to welcome our visitors who flock in the summer months. And I'm saying a particular welcome to you, Jim Scott, today. I've known of Jim Scott's music as a UUA musician for many years. I've been singing some of your rounds for a long time. But I'm almost also really proud to say that you're one of the founders of the Green Sanctuary Programme in the States, which really encouraged congregations to be more environmentally aware. So we'll be hearing more about your views of the environment in this service. This is a more musical service than usual, so I encourage you to sit back and to relax. And let's just take one of those breaths that we often do and just allow ourselves to be here now, acknowledging the journey that we've had to get here and any of those idgety things that happen on Sunday mornings when we're rushing to be here. And know that that's okay, that we are here now and that we've got a tuneful hour to spend together here.
And if we might all put our telephones in worship mode, and I'll turn off that lady on the sat nav and the data roaming. And I collect Unitarian churches. I've been to about 600. It's taken me 30 years. And we do have more to say about Green Sanctuary, well, and more about my ecological bent. It's what I concern myself with a lot, and I've made a lot of music about the earth and why we need it and such. We light a chalice at the beginning of our celebrations. Sometimes we even light a chalice at our business meetings or at camps and conference centers, wherever you find Unitarians and UUs, Unitarian Universalists in the States, you'll probably find a chalice or several. I know people who travel with chalices. I haven't quite ascended to that myself. But it's a symbol of our free faith, we say, our free search for faith, our free lack of faith, as some have put it, and it is symbolic of a great many things. On another Sunday, it might have an entirely different connotation, but for me today, it means the earth is a vessel sailing on with a fire in its heart. I heard from someone that the inside of the earth is virtually as hot as the sun. I believe it was on BBC. And if it's that hot on the inside, where are the flames on the outside? Well, we must be them. We are that energy force of earth, burning, oxidizing, green and blue and white when you see us from out in space, down here on the ground, fashioning from the earth a whole spectrum of color, providing this mysterious and mystical balance of peace and health and justice that we might call spirit. I like this word spirit, as you'll see. Wasn't that a good segue? Can we find him? It's number 43 in your beautiful new book. I'm honored to have a couple of songs in this great purple book of yours, of ours. And I forgot to tell you, I'm going to start halfway through. And you can find me at some point. So I'm going to start about halfway through the song and sing you the latter part of the song as an introduction. So that'll just be me and the people who weren't paying attention. And then we'll all start at the beginning. May we stand for this as willing and able. Gather! See anybody under 21 in front of me, which I do, I always like to put a kid's song in a program because kid's songs are sneaky. You can sing about all kinds of values in a children's song and not scare anybody. It's just a kid's song. You can sing about sharing and no one calls you a communist and things like that. So, I wonder, do kids come up in front, or do we? There's not a lot of us today. I think it'd be fine if you stay where you are with your big people today.
They brought some friends from the rainforest.
Well, wonderful. Is anybody saying, what would be your second grade? Anybody that just got getting done in second? Going to be in second grade next year.
What's that? What age?
Used to be in second grade.
What age is that?
Well, it's malleable, I guess. But I wrote this song with 7 and 8 year olds. And they told me all about the rainforest. They knew all about it.
going to put this down just a little bit.
Living in Eugene, Oregon, as I did then, I got to tell him I kind of lived in the rainforest. But they've been studying the tropical rainforest. So that's a little different than my temperate rainforest. So they told me about lots of animals. There's a lot of animals in the song. And they told me about the four levels of the rainforest, which I thought should go in the song too, though I'd never heard that before. The four levels. Some human made that up. The four levels. It's in a book. I like to say I think we were thrown out of the Garden of Eden for dividing it into separate fields of study, but that's another sermon. On the ground level, turtles and leopards and snakes live in the shelter the understory makes. The ground is so soft and the air is so clear. Chorus to you with four notes. Oh, that the rain, you can sing it. Feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life. Sing me the song of life. You sing such a beautiful sound. And down in the ground, the worms and the ants.
Biggest old trees stick up through the canopy, sometimes way above the canopy. That's called the emergent level. And that's the four levels. And this is my musical memory device. There's the understory. The understory goes up and down. The understory. what that shows me is this and all this stuff going on all around us, all about us, up in the air, down in the ground, down in the water, all around us are all these things working together that keep us going. One word for that might be harmony. I like that because I'm a musician. The harmony of nature, you've heard that. But another word for it just might be peace. And I hope kids today will look for a little of that peace in your life. Big people too. And kids are staying in the service, or we're singing right now.
They've got an activity to go
okay,
to.
The kids are going to go off to something more interesting now. And we'll sing you out with one more chorus. Thanks for being here, kids.
Let's join in a time of prayer and reflection now. So I call on the God of our hearts and our understanding, the spirit of life and love, the source of all being, to be with us now and to bless all that we say and do together this morning. Let's take a moment to think of the issues that we heard expressed as we lit candles of joy and concern, and to think of the joys and concerns of our wider world, all the troubles that we hear reported, and also the wonderful acts of kindness and thoughtfulness and beauty that don't always get reported in the news. Let us align ourselves with all that we know to be good and true and inspiring, and be grateful this day for what we have. Amen.
Go your way in peace.
I think it says in the book, I stole that from Mozart. Borrowed. On the day after what we now call the attack on America, or know by its cryptic numerals 9/11, my garden yielded up corn and beans and cucumbers, eggplant, persistent and unjudgmental as the sun that follows a storm. This orchard and garden is often my asylum, and I find rooting in the soil to be fitting response in troubled times. Now seasons of bloom and fruit have come and gone again, while the perpetrator, long since identified, has haunted our collective soul. Immersed, though, in this lush and healing context, I find myself imagining the conversation I might have had with Osama bin Laden. I picture he could have been a farmer, a rich one, if given the chance. He'd probably see my abundance as the spoils of evil powers. Or maybe I'd just be a peasant in the eyes of such an extraordinarily rich man turned international criminal. I dream, though, we could talk about injustice and struggle for equality in this sanctuary I have fashioned by my own hands. As the dog runs circles in your yard nearby, I would speak for nonviolence. He would have to educate me as to the oppression of his people, and no doubt make the case for revolution. Now, some may take offense at my attempt to even humanize such a monster. The most disturbing part to reconcile, I think, is that he at least saw himself as a deeply religious man. I offer no defense for his actions. But world leaders have long sent young people into battle to kill, convinced of their justification. And some previously obscure Muslim cult certainly holds no monopoly on vengeance as policy. Perhaps it is not to the hardened criminal blinded by hate that I speak. I imagine listening to the anger and the accusations of all those people he claims to represent here in my tranquil garden. Among apple, peach, and cherry trees, there would be enough beauty and serenity all about us to keep us engaged. In the company of swelling pumpkins or savoring a fresh tomato, we might talk of the horrors of war. Amid roses and fragrant herbs, we might consider what he could possibly hope to accomplish through such violence. There is, I suppose, no real place for negotiation with the perpetrators of such crimes. Mr. bin Laden, or whoever it is like him, would argue there is no negotiating with the evil U.S. and the morally corrupt Western powers. Under the grape arbor, we might argue and disagree, and yet still be able to continue. I'm afraid, though, there might not be enough magic here, enough aura of harmony to hold our arguments in its energy field. One could easily run off in a fit of anger across the road, past the picket fence fortresses of the middle class, out to the highway and the city, where bastions of excess and consumption are monuments to a society dangerously out of balance with itself and the earth. It will take a bigger garden, a larger and more inclusive sanctuary, where time is suspended for depth of reflection. I pray for that garden of all the earth, where all are included, between the quiet where one might speak and be heard, and the sustenance of food, fresh air, and natural systems, busy in their harmony of symphonic proportions. Only then might our dialogue really take root. I am waiting in the silence. I am waiting for the dawn. I am often found in reverence, though from many sources drawn. It is not mine to fight for justice, for it will not be won this day. I am peace, and I am waiting for the lost to find their way. You'll not find me set in judgment of the vain or of the weak, but I rise to meet the weary with the solace that they seek. Still I have not fed the hungry, nor strewn wealth among the poor. I am peace, and bring but mystery, and the patience to endure. I cannot save the suffering from their anger and their pain. Only open doors of insight, so the healing comes again. To the proud I am elusive, to the humble I am near. May the broken rise and look beyond the trappings of their fears. I am found among the seasons, autumn's death and spring's rebirth, as relentless their momentum as the turning of the earth. All are welcome in my presence, for only love can conquer hate. I am peace, and for the harvest I have planted and will wait. Don't worry, I'm going to talk less right now. We're perilously late. I was my fault that we started a bit late. We're still a little bit on jet lag. We have a couple of weeks to spend now in the UK, so we're really looking forward to it. I brought my daughter Louisa with me too. Don't mean to embarrass you, but there she is, and I'm proud of her. I've been a singer-songwriter for quite some time. I like to say composer sometimes when I'm on my good behavior, and I'll get closer to this. And I have chosen to write about peace and the earth and things like that because it fascinates me, and because I like to put a little science in some songs. And I don't do a lot of "I need you, baby, I can't live without you, I'm going to do something self-destructive unless you come back." I don't have a lot of those. But I got to make a big piece of music with the Paul Winter Consort now 3 decades ago. It's called the Missa Gaia Earth Mass. And I hadn't known until that point, until Paul Winter handed around the book by James Lovelock, which had just come out around then. His Gaia hypothesis — he's a scientist, so he poses as a hypothesis — his Gaia hypothesis is using this Greek goddess Gaia, who's kind of a Mother Earth figure, as a personification, if you will, to personify for us that the earth is one living thing. That was his hypothesis. I think we take it as more than a hypothesis. It's a poetic view, perhaps, and we can argue about the semantics of these things. Scientists like to do that. But the idea that we're all part of this one mechanism of life, this one organism, this one body, all of life we know is here on this little finite planet. We're figuring there's some out there in some other places. The water on Mars maybe had some life sometime. Other places that we'll never get to in our human lives. Maybe there is life. But all we know is right here. And I don't need to waste time to tell you that our sheer biomass of humans and their leverage has brought about the sixth great extinction of all time. We are now in the sixth great extinction of all time. The Earth's basal metabolism is changing. The thing we've banked on, the next harvest and the seasons and all, are being upset. What we like to call it now is climate disruption. Climate change is even, we got these well-paid people in our government that, if you ask me, are bought off by giant corporations. And they're still saying, oh, there's a lot of doubt still about this. And well, things have always been changing, so you can't use the word change or global warming. Oh, well, warming, cold, you know. Look, it was a cold winter, such and such. It was a cold winter in Massachusetts this year. So that proves something. Well, the people on small Pacific islands, or the people in the valley where there used to be snow on top of the mountain and there isn't anymore, and there's no water coming down the mountain anymore, they know. The people rich enough to be insulated and ignorant for the moment are running our country, I'm afraid. Well, we have a very nice man as a president, but our Congress, you've probably heard about it, so I won't waste time on that. They're remarkably ignorant. They are just staggeringly dumb. People say, oh no, they're smart like a fox. No, they're not. They are dumb. They don't know. They're killing themselves. They're killing us. They're throwing the poor people under the bus as they drive the bus off the cliff. We cannot let these people run the world anymore. In any place where there is a participatory democracy, we gotta do something. We cannot just sit back and show up to vote on the voting day. We got to be more involved than that. Because the very life support system that there is in such crisis now. We used to talk about the diversity of species or the water or the air quality. Now this climate disruption has swept in and taken all the headlines. And scientists say that it's a race between the extinction of species, and of course they're all caught up together, and this climate disruption, which will get us first. The species that sustain humanity, bees, bats, frogs, so on, water purifying organisms, are in trouble. There is a group in England, I have to look their name up again. You might be more familiar with them than I am. That's their pitch, not that they've given up at all. Their pitch, though, is it's too late. Someone can probably tell us the name of this group. It's too late. The world you thought you had last year, you don't have anymore. What you thought you had when you were a kid is not there. I used to say, well, I have to be dignified about this, and I can't say you must do this, and so on like that. So I'm trying to be polite. But my message to you all is we don't have much time. We are proud people. We won't panic. We'll form committees. We'll have discussions. We'll have events. And that organic dinner, some vegetarian dinner, or talk about whether we should have a lawn in front of our church, or things like that. These are discussions we need to get everybody to go along with us. Pointing fingers at each other and so on won't get us anywhere, and working on guilt. I'll just say this is much harder to do by yourself. And that is the beauty and the power and the strength of this this community, that we can say, we're going to do things differently. I've been a part of making this group called the Green Sanctuary, or rather a program in the U.S., and it's a handbook and a course of action and a course of study and a course of action. And then also I got a grant from our Unitarian Universalist Association to make a big book of songs called the Earth and Spirit Songbook, because my bias is songs help us celebrate and teach us in an unscary way. So this is my work, and I love it. And I feel better when I get to talk about it. So thank you very much. It's delightful to drive a long way and get people to pay attention to you. This is very therapeutic. So thank you for listening, and I'm going to ask for reinforcements and get a song in, I think, if it
we're
is not
take
too late.
And
yes, so as we're celebrating this life support system, this Mother Earth, let's take this time, and choir can angel. We'll take this time also to consider this more immediate life support system, the work of this church community. And a rainforest animal right here
yeah,
for us.
They're coming in.
And we'll take the offering.
Far beyond the grasp of hands, or light to meet the eye, past the reaches of the mind, there find the key to nature's harmony in an architecture so inclined. Like the birds whose patterns graze the sky and carry all the joy in love expanding, the message of
in the oneness of air.
enjoy this final song. I have been singing this song for an awful long time, or at least the chorus of it, and I didn't know it had anything to do with you, Jim. So I'm looking forward to hearing you sing it. May your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn.
The chorus is an old Russian folk song, actually. It won't sound that way now. I was just going to fix the words in English that I'd heard and make it a grammatical sentence, but I got carried away and added two verses. So you'll see where you come in. My wish for you, as now we part, is for greater peace to fill your heart with dreams as vast as starry space. So hurt and anger know no place. May truth be shared and wounds be healed, and joy for living be revealed. Through every fate and circumstance, may hope lead weary steps to dance. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing away the night, let us softly serenade the stars. striking young man. He met a beautiful woman named Love. Actually, I'm not sure who was the man and who was the woman. Maybe they were the same sex. "I'd like to keep you," said Wisdom. "You can't own me," said Love. "But I love you anyway." "What would it cost to know you'd always be there?" asked Wisdom. "Don't ask such questions," said Love. "Just look at the stars." "Why?" Wisdom pondered. "Are they telling us something?" "Oh, chill out," chided Love, which made Wisdom happy in a funny sort of way. And so it was that Wisdom fell in love with Love, and thus became truly wise. Let's go in peace.
Thank you.